Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Traces of meldonium, then they would be basically
So now what happens is this particular fight between Wilder and Povetkin is now postponed. There is no makeup date set. They've been trying to put it together for at least a while now, or at least since January came up, and then went eventually to a first bid to be held on May 21st. And so here we are, pretty much under a week before the fight is supposed to happen, and now that fight is now put off due to positive or traces of a meldonium there. So what I was looking at with the reports that were coming out in reference to this case is that, as I was saying before, the main promoter for Alexander Povetkin was saying that those traces were coming because of what he was taking in September. And recently, at least through ESPN.com via Dan Rafael, there was that Alexander Povetkin, that is, he tested positive for meldonium in a test that was held in April 27th through the Voluntary Anti-Doping Association in Russia. And then while Andrei Ryabinsky said that low concentration of meldonium was found in his blood, it was also found in his urine. So it seems like that was more than it seems like the president of the Voluntary Anti-Doping Association, through their president, Dr. Margaret Goodman, that Povetkin was actually negative for any banned substances and tests that were on April 7th, April 8th, and April 11th. So it seemed like they were saying that Povetkin was using a meldonium between April 11th and April 27th. And that the negative results that were sent in on April 21st and April 30th. So this is something that, you know, kind of like rocks the sport temporarily, as this would be one of the most anticipated fights in the sport of boxing, especially through the first half of this year. It seems like DiBella had something to say on it in reference to the tests that were given out and what Ryabinsky was claiming. He was saying that the test results contradicts the statements that were made by Mr. Ryabinsky that was attempted to excuse a Povetkin's positive result. And then he said there was like a trace amount of meldonium in his system from 2015 that it would have shown up happened in April before the positive results. So here we're seeing that these tests are basically nullifying Alexander Povetkin of challenging for the WBC World Heavyweight Championship. And this may result into him being removed of the number one contender spot for the WBC championship, and for Deontay Wilder to move ahead towards going after another fight. I'm not sure what that fight will be, as, like I said, he's taken a few and been granted a few voluntary defenses of the WBC Heavyweight Championship, as he scored wins over Eric Molina, over Johan Duhavis and over and over Artur Stuka. So what that means is that he may be granted another here over the next few months or so before he gets a bigger fight in the future. Me personally, I mean, I kind of see this as disappointing. I was looking forward to this title fight between Wilder and Povetkin. As many of the listeners and the callers know, I favor Povetkin in this particular fight. I thought he would have the better skills coming into this fight, the bigger fight experience coming into this fight, and be able to take advantage of the mistakes that Deontay Wilder has shown in multiple fights that he's had, even though he was athletically much better than the opponents that he was facing up to this point. And so, you know, with that being said, I would have pretty much put Povetkin ahead of Deontay Wilder. And this has been echoed by, you know, a few, you know, websites and boxing organizations that, you know, kind of rate the heavyweights. They put Tyson Fury and Vladimir Klitschko as the top two heavyweights in the division. And right below those two is Alexander Povetkin. And so what this does is this basically, you know, removes Alexander Povetkin from that particular position and puts Wilder ahead of him as the pretty much the number three guy in that division. And so, kind of seems like right now, you know, I would say that Wilder is kind of disappointed in that, because this would have been his career high payday. He was really, you know, up to the point to where he was pretty much in Moscow fighting against Alexander Povetkin, and now this thing where it was like over a $7 million purse with Deontay Wilder due to make over $5 million for the fight. Now that has been taken away. So I guess his next fight, he won't be able to make that much money. It'll probably be around, you know, $2 million, $1.5 to $2 million or so, depending on the opponent. It probably could be more depending on who it is. But I think with the given the fact that it was an overseas fight and that the promoter, Ryan Bensky, was able to outbid Lou DiBella for this fight in the purse bid when it came up, that he was, you know, bound to, you know, see if he could get Wilder, that is, bound to get his career-high payday and move forward to see if he was able to defend his WBC championship belt. And, you know, with that being said, I think Deontay Wilder will move on. I don't think that there will be a makeup date for this fight between Wilder and Povetkin, as I feel that Povetkin may be disciplined by either the WBC or the anti-doping agency or the sanctioning bodies around Russia and worldwide, and say that he might lose his boxing license for a set period of time. So that is basically the ins and outs of what's happening right there, reference to Deontay Wilder and Alexander Povetkin. Right, we may get back into that a little bit later. Probably have a little bit more to say on that. But, you know, pretty much going to quickly move into the next topic in here. For those who are listening in, you can dial in at area code 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on queue and be able to talk live on the show. All right. Now, while that particular fight is postponed, the overall card in Moscow will take place for one. And for two, while there was that card in Moscow on May 21st, that was pretty much going to happen around 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. There still is a, big card on Showtime coming up later on that night as far as Eastern Time is concerned. You're going to have three fights around 9:30, 10 o'clock coming up there. When you have Arizona Delanda, Tishon, you have John Jackson against Jamal Charlo, and Jamal Charlo will be going up against Arsene Shaw. Real quick, we got area code 813. What's going on with you?
Hey, what up, guys? This is Terrell calling from Tampa, just checking in. How's everybody?
Oh, what's good, Terrell? What's good, Terrell? Just, getting in here. Started the show a little bit behind a bit. So, it was pretty much first 15 minutes here, and pretty much had my, take about the news with Deontay Wilder and Alexander Povetkin, and I was just about to get into the other card that was going to be on Showtime with the three Super Welterweight Championship fights coming up. So, you have anything to say about the news on Wilder and Povetkin?
When I read that today, I was like totally in shock. I mean, this is boxing. There's many nuances and angles and stories in boxing. And this is definitely one of the more unfortunate ones. This is a fight that we've all been looking forward to for Wilder to prove his validation in the sport, his validation of his belt, and a validation of a Class A opponent. And for this to happen, it's like, wow, and just in a little bit of detail, the substance that Povetkin tested positive for is a substance that basically gives you better endurance. So basically, the longer you go, the more endurance with your blood flow that you can have. And certainly in boxing, that's everything. Because, I mean, boxers, particularly in the heavyweights, have we seen where fighters are only good for like 4, 5, 6 rounds. And this is actually the same substance that the tennis player Maria Sharapova got banned for as well. So it's just very unfortunate for so many things, not to mention the fact that Wilder's been in camp. He's also been in England getting ready to make that trek over to Russia to do the fight. So he's wasted time, money, not to mention the fact there's a potential lawsuit pending because the fight is delayed. Because at this point, his purse is in escrow. Of course, with the fight not being happening right now, he's going to get that purse unless they actually sue for that. So there's so many different stories from the fight. From the lack of this fight, should I say. And,
yeah.
I mean, I just spoke on this last week where I made a statement myself. If Wilder can get everything he wants, we have a great story. We have a great story. And just to see this delayed, and particularly for this reason, I mean, and just on top of that, in another detail with that, what if the fight had went on? And then what if Wilder had taken a loss? Would it be by knockout or by rounds? And then from that point, the testing after the fact would have came out that Povetkin was positive. I mean, how big would that story be? And not to mention the threat of his health and find a performance-enhanced fighter. So it's just unfortunate. I'm glad they caught it. And even despite the fact there was a minute amount found in his blood sample, still is there. I mean, come on now. We know with professional athletes, there's masking. There's all kind of attempts to hide what you're doing. And that's certainly the case here, what it seems like, So, unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, the thing about it is that in reference to Wilder's case, it's probably, good at that point, instead of after the fact. Like you said, it could have, pose a danger to Wilder in that fight, particularly. And something where, a lot of times, Antoine Tagio back in March 5th. And then after that, he got tested for the for a banned substance, which was clenbuterol, pretty much after the fight. And then they were waiting on a B sample. And then once the B sample came in, that was what officially stripped him of the WBA regular heavyweight championship. And so now Ruslan Chagayev is now, you know, once again the WBA regular champ. So, I mean, in this case, if they went ahead and gone through with the fight, and if Povetkin won and got caught with those substances, then Povetkin would have been stripped in Deontay Wilder would still be the WBC champion. You know, but at least here, they caught it before the fact. Now he may, you know, lose $5 million because the fight won't be going on. But you know, still, like you say, there's always risk in boxing, and you can't, you know, necessarily put yourself in danger in that case.
Yeah, it's, and also the fact that Wilder was basically waiting until the last minute to try to get the fight to go on anyway, but wisely from management and his handlers, like I said, they just declined to do it and work with the WC. And like I said, I mean, you know, I'm sure some of the thoughts run through his head that him as a fighter, he's ready. He's ready. He considered all the possibilities of what the guy was taking and the levels that was resident in his system. And probably thought himself, you know what, he probably was like, F it. I want to do the fight anyway. But like I said, wisely, management shut it down. Because like I said, you never know what can happen in boxing. You never know. What if the fight would have went on and he took the loss? I mean, he would have took a loss, and not to mention that, a huge damage on his reputation, his psyche as a fighter, even after the fact that it would have came out that it was an illegitimate win if Povetkin would have won it, you know? I mean, just imagine
right.
His credibility, and it's just, bottom line, like you said, it was just the best decision was for the fight to be canceled, and it was. But it's just, you know, it just leaves that sour taste in your mouth about boxing. And really, I mean, what about now the credibility of Povetkin now? That's certainly a question. And this is a shame coming from an Olympic athlete. And from that point, you have no choice but to look at his entire body of work and say, well, how long has he been doping? And not to mention the fact that this is another mainstream Russian athlete using the same type of a performance-enhancing drug. So now you look at that, you have to question the credibility of that region as well. You know, so it's just so many stories that come out of this.
Right. I mean, you could question a lot of the athletes that are pretty much around that area that may be taking that now. I mean, like I was saying in the reports, I mean, up to the point of September when the voluntary anti-doping agency did that particular substance was going to be banned, and then they, you know, tried to put it into effect. You know, put it into effect after January 1st. I mean, that kind of like you said, it kind of calls into question what Alexander Povetkin was doing up to that point. You know, so maybe he was, you know, taking that substance. While it may have been allowed back then, it still, you know, goes to the fact that, okay, sometimes some of these things are allowed and sometimes they're not, but it's still like a performance enhancer, while other fighters pretty much may not, you know, take anything like that at all. You know, we're still caught fighting these guys that are taking these substances.
Yeah, so I mean, I still hope that they fight, and that certainly would. I'm sure. Well, there would be no doubt about the testing process and the results thereof before this fight happens, but it's like, where do you go now? And part of Wilder's disappointment was the fact that he's always stated that he wants to be an active fighter, I forgot when his last fight was. He's fought this year, right? Once.
Yeah, he fought in January. What was it? January 16th at the Barclays Center against Arthur Smilka. So,
right.
He was able to get that knockout.
So, I mean, that right there throws a huge wrench into him being an active fighter for this year, because this would have been his second fight. This is May, and theoretically he could have fought two more times this year. So that right there alone is in jeopardy. Once again, back to the money portion of it. Because, like I said, right now his purse is in escrow right now in the stateside account. That's in jeopardy. Like I said, unless you go pursue a lawsuit to get that part of that back. And there has been history. I think I forgot what fight that was referenced in the article I read where it referenced the same promoter that did won the purse bid for this fight. Had his fighter. It was the Lebev fight and Guillermo Jones, where Guillermo Jones tested positive after a fight. Where in that fight, once that result was revealed, the promoter was actually sued, and I'm not sure if they got the entire purse or a portion of it, but that's certainly a legal question for Wilder's team. But like I said, back to the point where his second fight for this year is out of works. I mean, it would be nice if they could put together a pack of home for him maybe it could headline a PBC show or something like that, you know, just
right.
So he won't waste all that training camp time, effort, energy, and money just to get back on the shelf again. You know, I mean, it's like, why should he suffer because of somebody else's misuse? So hopefully they can
right.
put something together for him, you know. And of
yeah,
course, if we know
that could be, you know, probably put into place for him over the next couple of months or so. Maybe they could get something done for July and see if he could be fit in a PBC card in July. But yeah, for the time being, right now, you know, he's basically now put, I would say, on the shelf. And to kind of like do that and not have him active for another fight is, you know, pretty much a downer. Like I said, even if he does get that fight, that's kind of like losing about, you know, $2 million to $2.5 million. You know, if he's able to take, you know, another fight. And, you know, while he was on Showtime for this last fight against Arthur Smilka, I think that, you know, if he is able to, you know, get another one, I think that NBC would be, you know, kind of an idea for him to go after. And I don't know if there's anybody big enough, but I think a pretty good doubleheader would be, could be in the works so that, you know, you kind of like have somebody that's a semi-big name that's, you know, part of the undercard, and then have him headline as a main event.
Yeah, and just a side note in regards to this topic line, with the announcement of this past week that the fact that the PBC is team up with ESPN to advertise a portion of the fights over the summer. So with that said, there's likely to be some dates that open up. And if I were on an executive within that framework, I would definitely want to identify him for that type of fight, considering the type of budget that they command, commensurate with the type of opponent that would be on a card like that. I'm sure that Showtime executives are highly, highly displeased over this result, being the fact that they signed Brazil and Anthony Joshua to fight. I forget the date of that fight, but you know, earlier this year they kind of made a statement that we're going to command the heavyweight division now. And this is certainly a blow to them as well. So, you know, privately, they're certainly not happy about this. Not at all. Not at all.
No, they aren't. No, they aren't. And the thing is that particular fight between Brazil and Joshua, that'll be June 25th. So that thing is pretty much a month after what this fight was going to be originally scheduled for. You know, so they were probably planning on seeing if, you know, if Wilder was able to score this win over Alexander Povetkin and Anthony Joshua was going to get this win over Dominic Brazil, that they'll probably have a unification fight between those two fighters. And it'll probably, you know, be in England and have, you know, Eddie Hearn make, you know, get that fight put together, you know. And that would, you know, get another, you know, kind of big payday for Deontay Wilder if both of these fights are able to take place.
Well, just and just on the potential notion of that fight, given Joshua's limited record, do you think everything he's done right now would suggest a big fight between him and Wilder at this point? What do you think about that? Has he done anything? What I'm saying.
What do you think about? What you ask about the possibility of it, or
yeah? I mean, do you think how big would that fight really be commercially?
I don't think it would be like on a world scale. I don't feel like it will be that big right now. When, you know, when I was pretty much talking about Anthony Joshua, you know, to start off with, I was saying that, you know, if he was able to get, you know, a title or something like that, that if Wilder was still around, I think that they would probably face each other in 2017 or 2018. I didn't think that, you know, what was it that Joshua was going to get the title fight against Charles Martin right off the bat. And with that, you know, eventually scoring that win. So with him getting that belt, he could, you know, take his voluntary defense here against Dominic Brazil. And then if they're able to put together a unification fight between those two by the end of this year, that would be, you know, surprising to me and, you know, to some extent because I would have thought that they would kind of Joshua along a little bit slowly. I mean, he hasn't really had 20 fights under his record yet. And he's already a, you know, major heavyweight champion. You know, so right now the prospect of those two fighting each other in 2016, I don't think that will, you know, kind of happen all too much. It just depends on what happens here with when Wilder is able to fight again. You know, Joshua has his title fight against Dominic Brazil in June 25th. And also, the updated news on, you know, what would happen between in the rematch between Tyson Fury and Wladimir Klitschko. So I'd have to see what happens in reference to all of that.
Well, and just on that same line, a potential fight between Wilder and Joshua. To use that old boxing term that we hear all the time, that fight would definitely need to simmer. Because, I mean, that's on paper, even right now, that would be a great matchup with the size, the aggression level from both fighters. But, like I said, but like, we both want them to accomplish more now for that to be a bigger fight. We've seen the kind of the same thing in some other storylines in boxing, as far as the Triple G Canelo fight, although I think that everyone would be in agreement that that fight is ready to happen right now. If they put away all these petty squabbles and stuff like that, that fight, that potential fight has simmered long enough, and that's ready to click on that one right now. But back to Wilder Joshua, they like you said, Joshua he just recently got the belt. He needs to build a body of work in order to I mean, and kudos to him. He's getting ready to do that. Being the fact that he's coming here stateside to build his profile and his brand, that's going to do a whole lot for him. I wish there were other English fighters that do that, not only heavyweights like we know Linus Lewis, for example, from history. Cal Zaghi came here and was a great champion. I mean, sometimes I think about people forget about how good Cal Zaghi was. I mean, just the way he beat my homeboy. What's my homeboy from St. Pete? What's the guy's name? What's that?
Yeah, Jeff Lacy.
Yeah, Lacy. That was my boy. Knew him personally, but it was just that was a huge disappointment to see him get beat down and taken to school by Cal Zeggy. But back to Joshua, it's a great move of him coming here to secure him with Showtime and to build up a body of work. So, I mean, even with this upcoming fight for him, it's very intriguing. Now, I just recently watched the Brazil-Mansur fight recently, just taking some boxing. And I'm not – now, first of all, Brazil has size, but we all know that size doesn't mean anything. I mean, because Joshua's last fight with Martin, those guys are basically the same size. Of course, different structure, built differently, different. All that stuff's different, but same. But you can't teach size, though. You're here across sports. You can't teach size. So Brazil does have the size. But one thing about that Mansur fight is that he came in with a lot of aggression. He knew he's a smaller man. But he just kept it rough, kept coming at him. It's like I said, for the matchup for the Brazil Joshua, that's going to be great on paper. So I don't know what can come out of that. It certainly looks like Joshua's definitely going to be the favorite. I'm sure he already is, you know. But it's just a lot to look forward to.
Yeah. I feel like Joshua's a big favorite there in that fight. They kind of, once they announced this fight, I was immediately thinking about that Brazil fight against Amir Mansour and that. Amir Mansour was pretty much getting to Dominic Brazil, and I think he dropped him one time in that particular fight. The thing was, it was that I think after the fight, he ended up messing up with the mouthpiece and his tongue, and really like injured himself severely there, and couldn't necessarily continue the fight because he was, pretty much bleeding out from his mouth because of the major laceration that was in his tongue. So, Brazil was able to survive that particular fight, and now he was able to, get into the rankings for the IBF heavyweight division. And so now he gets the chance to win the IBF championship against Anthony Joshua, but I feel like he will not pull that off. All right, real quick, thing for all those that are listening online on the MRN Broadcast Channel here on Blog Talk Radio. If you want to talk boxing, the number is 347-237-5539. Once again, that's 347-237-5539. All right, moving in as we have going towards about 20 minutes left in the live portion of the show. We do have that triple header on Showtime's I'd say about 8 o'clock, 8:30, starting with Arislan de Lara against Baines, Chael Sonnen. And we also have the Charlo brothers in action as we have Austin Trout going up against Jermall Charlo. And Jermall Charlo will have a chance to win a belt. The WBC junior middleweight belt as he goes up against Sean Jackson. So you have Jermall Charlo and Sean Jackson, who are rated number one and number two for the vacant 154-pound championship that was vacated by Floyd Mayweather. And you have Jermall Charlo going up against Austin Trout, who only had his two losses to Canelo Alvarez and to Arislan de Lara. So those three fights are going to be very good fights. Lara and Mateo Sion, Marta Rosen, I always get that last name wrong, fought each other before. So this is going to, that one's going to be a rematch too. And so this is going to be at the Cosmopolitan up in Las Vegas, scheduled for 9 p.m. Eastern time on Showtime Sports. So I'm looking at this rematch between Lara and Baines, and I think this is one that, would kind of like have people having their eyes on Arislan de Lara, because we've had, kind of some news about him as he's kind of like talking about moving up to middleweight, trying to get a fight with Gennady Golovkin, and seeing if that fight could take place. But now he's basically they're still there around the 154-pound division, still able to, you know, defend that belt as he did fight Canelo at the 155 pounds. It was still able to keep the belt to defend it a little bit after that. So here we have Laura versus Bane. So what do you think about this one here, Terrell, Laura and Bane?
Well, just to take a step back for a minute, I mean, we talked about this upcoming weekend for the past month, and I've definitely identified this as a great weekend of boxing. But and back when we talked about then, that's when we had the Povetkin and Wilder fight. But even now in the aftermath of that fight being canceled, we still have a great weekend of boxing. And, like I said, from the Trout fight with the Charlo Boy, other Charlo Boy, as well as Laura Vane's fight as well. This is a great weekend in boxing because this can produce some great matchups. Now, first of all, I'm definitely a Laura fan. Laura has good size. He's slick. He's ultra slick and good power. And not only that, he has professed his desire to fight Triple G. Now, one thing that we talked about in here when we talked about Triple G, which it seems like all the time on the show, is his lack of opponents and stuff like that. And one thing that we mentioned is like, well, not someone, but the networks need to get involved in generating and making the matchups, you know. And this weekend can certainly do that. From Laura's insistence or his request to for a Triple G fight. I mean, the thing about it, these are our junior middles. So, I mean, and considering the build of these guys can I'm not going to say easily, but these guys can go up to middleweight for a fight, you know. And I don't think that's out of the question for any of the contestants fighting this weekend. Maybe perhaps except for like a Baines. I don't know if he can go up to middleweight. I think that would be a predictable result if he fought a Triple G. But as far as Laura, we know he can do it. And even the Charlo boys, they can do it as well. I believe they're around 5'11", something like that. I don't know. They'll walk around with.
Yeah, they're tall guys. They could definitely be at middleweight. They can, you know, pretty much. They've almost been at the point to where they've been the same size as Andre Ward before Ward was moving up to light heavyweight. So they can definitely come, you know, cut down to where they could fight at middleweight.
Yeah, and just in contrast to that, we know that Triple G has an ultra aggressive style, come forward. I won't say he has minimal defense, but he has good defense. But you think about the type of fighter that's going to take to be able to beat Triple G. And I think that my man Will Rank always said here on the show that you're going to need somebody that's going to be able to command Triple G's respect, whether with a jab or just his power shots. I mean, we look back at the Triple G-Willie Monroe fight, even the Triple G, what's the guy's name from New York, Stevenson fight. There are certain points in those respective fights where, with one, Willie Monroe, he had to fight back. At some point in time, you got to fight back. And even in that, I think it's the third or fourth round, that whatever it was, when he fought Triple G, Triple G was like, yeah, come on, give me more of that. Give me more of that. Let's go. But unfortunately, Monroe wasn't able to sustain that output, the offensive output, and give it back to him on that level before he succumbed to the knockout and everything, or TKO, whatever it was. But even the Stevenson fight, that was a great fight going in. There were some good exchanges in that fight, but once again, he eventually succumbed to that. So you're looking forward to going forward to a potential matchup between a Laura or even one of the Charlo boys. Now, skill-wise, well, I mean, first of all, I have to separate Laura from the Charlo boys because they're two totally different fighters and stuff like that. But as far as the level, at this point, I would not be hesitant to call the Charlo boys A-level fighters at this point. I wouldn't mind saying that. They're right there. But you think they certainly got the speed. Laura has the speed. Laura has the power, a good enough power, to command that respect from a Triple G. So I hope that somebody can rise from this weekend to be a good A-level opponent for Triple D, which he desperately needs, you know.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. So we'll see what's going on with that one. I'll see y'all.
All right.
So, what's going to happen here is, I'm not necessarily sure what's going to be going down with, the Charlo brothers after this particular fight. I mean, especially with the one that's facing John Jackson, as that's going to be for that vacant WBC Super Welterweight Championship. So I think he's going to probably try to defend that belt one or two times, before considering moving up. And I think, the other Charlo, he's going to be in there, in a battle with Austin Trout. Of course, Austin Trout was on this show over the season last year and eventually scored like a victory before. So he had that one fight last year. So now he's, stepping up here to, fight one of these Charlo brothers to see if he can regain a Super Welterweight Championship, because he was able to get one with his win over Miguel Cotto a few years ago. So I'm thinking with, any of those fighters could potentially be challenging there at middleweight. But to me, Super Welterweight as a whole is a much more competitive division. I mean, you have those guys, those six guys that are in the division themselves. You have Julian Williams there. You have, like, a few other guys within that particular division that, can challenge each other to, prove who is the best guy at 154 pounds. I think, top to bottom, that's one of the, most loaded divisions in the sport of boxing. I mean, we all know about 147, but 154 is, like, right there behind them.
Oh, you're certainly right about that. So, like I said, once again, a lot of great matchups to be made. This is a great weekend for this division. A lot that's going to come out of this. I mean, I'm not going to say it's a predictable result with Lara Baines, but I certainly expect for Lara to move forward from that fight onto bigger and better things. So I don't think that Baines has enough to offer in this fight. It's probably going to be dirty at times. That's probably just what's going to happen, but certainly expect for Lara to move forward from that. But today is only Sunday. I can't wait for Sunday, because next Sunday we'll know all the results of these fights. So that's a great,
yep.
Great time.
Yep, no doubt. All right, so we pretty much covered on what's going to be happening, next weekend. But I'm going to see here in the last 10 minutes or so here on the live portion of the show, if I could go back to the card on Friday night. As we had two cards, we had one that was in Washington, D.C., actually, over at the D.C. Armory. And that was pretty much the fourth fight card in the D.C. Armory over the past 2 months or so. It started from March 5th, and then, we had a couple of other ones. Had one, April 1st with Adrian Broner headlining. We had, something at the end of April with a couple of the super middleweight championship fights there. And so we kind of like ended with the card that was on BET, kind of a confession with me, as this is like the basically the only reason that I would be ever caught watching BET is to watch boxing. So we had, at the main event, we had undefeated welterweight Dusty Hernandez Harrison, who was from the southeast portion of Washington, D.C., going up against Michael Dallas Jr., who was pretty much a regular veteran there. He was about like 24 or 25 and 3 going into this fight. And it looked like, people thought that Hernandez Harrison was going to get through this fight fairly easily and get an easy win, but Mike Dallas basically had other plans. Dallas came out there firing from round one, throwing a lot of jabs, throwing a lot of three-punch combinations, making Hernandez Harrison basically resetting his stance for, you know, a good portion of the fight. And even then, Dallas was a knockdown in the fifth round with about 30 seconds to go. So Mike Dallas was taking Hernandez Harrison's punches. I mean, it wasn't anything that necessarily really stopped Mike Dallas until about the eighth round, where it seemed like he had a dangerously low shot to the body that could have been considered a low blow that put Mike Dallas to his knee, to one knee, and the referee eventually counted him, so he ended up losing that point for that fight, for that round. And so it ended up being a majority draw between Hernandez Harrison and Mike Dallas. It, you know, one scored the fight 95-94 for Hernandez Harrison, and another handed 96-92 for Mike Dallas, and the third scored it for a draw. And, to me, watching that fight from start to finish, I thought that Mike Dallas truthfully won that fight. I didn't think that there was anything that Hernandez Harrison did, even with scoring that controversial knockdown. There wasn't really anything that Hernandez Harrison did that kind of, you know, stopped Mike Dallas from doing what he was doing from round one to round 10. You know, so what that means is that Hernandez Harrison stays undefeated there, but pretty much has that one draw on his record. And, you know, the reaction to the fights by many people is that got robbed. I mean, a lot of, you know, boxers on Twitter were saying that Mike Dallas earned the win for that fight, including Shane Mosley and Julian J-Rock Williams. So I pretty much felt the same way in that case. I'm not sure if you, Terrell, if you were able to catch that fight, but it was a controversial draw there for Hernandez Harrison. So is there, like, anything you want to take from that?
Yeah, I didn't see that fight. Unfortunately, I was working on the weekends like always. I did catch your comment on social media that put me in the mind of what happened with that. So, for one, I'm assuming that this was a 10-round fight. And from that point, and correct, that was a 10-round fight, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So, from that point, you think about your 10-round fights, that modifies your score right there. So, with that said, you got to win and establish yourself within these first three rounds to get your groove. From that point, you can kind of judge on how the fight's going to be, how it's going to turn out. With that said, from what I'm hearing about this, is that Mike Dallas came in as just pretty much as an opponent to an undefeated fighter. Probably a lot of people pronounced would basically say, hey, this is going to be a win. He's fighting a named guy, because we know Mike Dallas has been around for a while. But like you said, Mike Dallas came out with a different game plan. Like, no, this is not going to be a win. I'm not coming here for a paycheck. I'm coming to fight. And from what you told me, he certainly came out and did that and established himself from end to end. So you think, what round was Mike Dallas got his knockdown in? What round was that?
Mike Dallas scored a knockdown in the fifth round.
Okay. So, you know, that right there, so that's going to be a 10-8 round right there. So that right there,
yeah.
Hopefully he should have been ahead all three rounds. I mean, you know, sometimes in a boxing match, the first round is going to be a fill-out round for both fighters, and it may be hard to discern who really rightfully should be awarded that round. So maybe in the first round you can say that. But going forward, rounds 2-3 sounds like we're definitely for Mike Dallas. And he got the knockdown in the fifth round. That's a 10-8 round. Right there, he should have been ahead on the scorecards. Right from that point right there.
Oh, yeah.
Going forward. Mm-hmm. And from that point, you stated that he basically kept up his level of aggression, not to mention the fact that when they got the questionable knockdown on Mike Dallas called against him, he still should have been ahead of the cards, at least by a round or two. and then for them to award the other guy the fight, I mean, I'm sorry, they gave award a draw for the fight. On paper, a hardcore boxing man, fight fixed. It's fixed. They just want a guy to stay undefeated. I mean, but what else should we think? You guys want to fight the fighters to beat it so they can move forward and not take a loss on the record.
And the thing about it is to me, watching that first round, Mike Dallas was getting off from the first round on. So I think you pretty much had at least the first three rounds of that fight. So if you had the first three rounds of that fight, and then even if you give like Hernandez Harrison that fourth round, then Mike Dallas would have that fifth round 10-8. So he would have four rounds in with a 10-8 round. No. So he would have been like majorly ahead halfway through the fight. And in order for Hernandez Harrison to basically catch up, he would have to duplicate that over the next five rounds. And to me, I feel like he didn't necessarily do that. I mean, he may have won four rounds with a knockdown, but that still puts, you know, Dallas ahead 6-4. Straight up. So I think, he kind of, got a break there. And even though Hernandez Harrison, after the fight, said it was down to do a rematch in California or something, Dallas would want to go ahead and go through a rematch immediately. That's pretty much my overall thoughts are on in that fight. Now I'm moving on to like the main event that was happening on Showtime. We had a cruiserweight. We actually had a cruiserweight doubleheader on there between Speedy and Tapia. Andrew Speedy is like one of the guys that they have under Mayweather's promotional company, and he's an undefeated fighter. I'm going in there against Tapia, who I think he's like part Cuban or Puerto Rican or part American. That went in there, and Speedy was able to score like a unanimous decision victory over Tapia, being like a more patient fighter. Tapia was kind of like going in there charging for the first round, but he was erratic. And I wouldn't necessarily say undisciplined, but he kind of like looked in there inaccurate with his punches in comparison to Andrew Tabidi. So Andrew Tabidi is, stays undefeated there for the money team upset. So he's probably one of the better fighters that Mayweather's promotion has on their team. So, not sure if you know about, Andrew Tabidi?
Yeah, I think I remember seeing him on the, if you call a few months back, you sent me some website information for the different promotional companies that are out there. I think I recall seeing his profile on their website. I do.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. This is a theoretical question. Something that's been around in boxing for ages. How much, and this is purely speculation, how much do you think a promoter, a team, or a network has on the influence of the result of a fight, being given a particular fighter like this guy, considering who he's with, or even actually consider a network, things like that? How much? Actually, it's speculation, it's nothing, you can't prove it. You never prove these things, but how much do you think that has to do with it?
Well, I mean, it's very considerable. I mean, if a promotional company or a network kind of sees the overall worth of a particular fighter, then they may, do a couple of things here and there that may be extra, to make sure that overall worth is still in effect for them. I mean, you might, get a couple of favorable decisions here and there, so to speak, in order to either, make sure that worth of that fighter is still intact, or
if it may lead to a rematch, then maybe the rematch brings in more money than the first fight does. So, I mean, if you like think about some of the promoters that are out there, the Luca Bellas, the I wouldn't necessarily say like Al Amos or anybody like that, but let's say like Luca Bella or the K2 guy that you have out there, and a couple of others, then if they see like a good thing in a fighter, or like, you know, with Golden Boy, if he may see something good in the fighter, then they might, you know, talk to a couple of guys over there in HBO or Showtime and say, hey, maybe, you know, could get more out of this guy than, you know, another guy that might have the same record or the same, not necessarily the same skills, but the same record that probably is more marketable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an article I read this past week where a U.S.-based fighter stated the fact that he's more than willing to one of the middle divisions. He basically made a statement that he's not afraid to go overseas to face a top fighter, but his main concern was that he wanted to be a fair situation, and what he's referring to was the judges. And so you stop right there and say, well, why would a fighter say that? Well, because the question I just asked. I said because a promoter, a network, a fighter, all those things aligned together can unfortunately affect the decision of a fight on how a fight progresses. From your referee, we've seen that I don't know how many a million times with a referee not getting involved or getting in the way too much to impede the progress of a certain type of fighter, and or just back to the original question, where the judges get involved and give you a less than honorable decision. So that like I said, those things are hard to prove, but it's certainly out there and can never be ignored in boxing. But I'm trying to think of that fighter because he said that he wouldn't mind going to fight. Because I can't. It's a top fighter too. Top fighter. It's not Crawford because Crawford's fighting Postal coming up.
Who is this guy you're talking about again?
I'm trying to think of the guy's name, but I just read the article this week. But okay. But I'll think of it in a minute. But it's just that example alone. He stated that, well, I don't want to go unless we know it can be a fair thing with the judges. But I'll think of that fighter in a minute. I'll pull it up.
Gotcha. Yeah, that would be something. I mean, you have some folks that, you know, are open to those challenges that are out there overseas. I mean, even if, you know, the money is right or something like that. But sometimes you have others where, you know, they kind of like have those certain demands because of it being overseas, as, you know, as we go through that recent example here with Vivek and Wilder. I mean, sometimes, you know, things get called into question in reference to, you know, the referees or what's happening in the ring and stuff like that, that, you know, kind of like makes some of these fighters skeptical to going overseas or going to a particular country. You got like anything real quick to say on that?
And what's kind of on the same talking point? Look at this. What would just happen this weekend? What could have happened? With Wilder for Beckham. What if Beckham didn't test positive? And then what if we'd have ran into a situation like this where he could have got a bad decision because of where he's at?
Right.
Because of the interest in that fighter. Oh, matter of fact, this is the fight that where Wilder was interviewed where he made the same point. He said, I don't mind. He said, as long as you get a fair shake. But I said, what if that could have happened? That could have easily happened where going into Russia where there's widespread corruption, not only in government but other things as well, particularly sports, and particularly the unregulated sport was unregulated. That could easily happen when he went over and got a job from a bad decision, regardless of what he did.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I mean, we look at lower level examples like the Mike Dallas fight. You know, where there's not much on the line, except for the record of an undefeated fighter, but look at this high stakes fight that could have happened between Wilder and Beckham. He could have easily went in and got a job, no matter what he did in the ring. And we've seen numerous times examples of that in history where a fighter goes there and then they're like, and the win, and the champ still is. We're like, what? You know?
Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, that's something that, you know, we should all be looking towards as far as, like, some of these fights, especially those that are overseas. I mean, you do have a couple of fights there that, you know, a lot of fights be happening in England, but other than England, we have, like I said, fights in Germany, Russia, of course, you have Bob Arum that tried to make Macau, China, a home for boxing. So I think all of these fighters that have been fighting in the States for a while are kind of weary into going overseas to those particular places in order to fight, you know. So, but on that note, I'll pretty much close off the show here this week, and then we'll be moving in next week for the next portion of the Boxing Source Radio Show. We're going to be back on at the regular time, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, on the MRN Broadcast Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to catch our sister shows that are on here Tuesday night with the Cohort Tucson Sports with the Execution of Matthew Long, and Wednesday night with the TNT Firestorm Football Talk Show with Kelly Mike, Chi-Town, Clausel Mathis, and other guests as well. With that being said, let me close out the show. And like I said, at the end of every show, Point of Boxing is hit and I get hit. I have to stand and trade. On that note, folks, I'm out.